This is the 9/11 teleconference. I'm sorry, the 9/11 truth, 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference for September 30, 2015. And Freeland is facilitating, and our illustrious secretary, Craig McKee, will take the role. Right, Craig?
Okay, well, I have eight names down, so I'm going to read them again, and if I miss anybody, just let me know. So I have Ken Freeland, Barry Zwicker, Craig McKee, Pat McGuire, Adam Syed, Adam Ruff, Mike Cook, and Barton Bruce. Did I get everybody? Sounds like it.
Yep. Okay. So the first item on our agenda, as usual, is to confirm the minutes of the previous meeting. Any objections to accepting the minutes is stipulated by Craig. Hearing none, then the minutes are approved as stipulated, and we'll move on to the draft agenda tonight. Any comments on the draft agenda? Any admissions or amendments or deletions or anything anybody wants to propose? Hearing none, then I guess we'll accept the draft agenda, adopt this for tonight's use, and move on to the first item. And that first item will be the report on the H.R. 14 Critics Group. Unfortunately, Cheryl Curtis apparently did not make it. I think I can probably give a very brief report on that just to move us along. The critics formed a group called, now calling itself the Truth Team. It has a Facebook page, and it's not really doing too much at the exact moment, but we did, about a week ago, publish an article summarizing our critique of the 28 Pages movement as it is showing up on hr14.org and some other websites in promotion of the official conspiracy theory. Hi, who'd you join the call?
This is Dwayne.
Hi, Dwayne.
Dwayne Dietz.
Okay, so that article was published on Global Research on Truth and Shadows and several other websites that are friendly to 9/11 Truth. It seems to have gotten pretty good circulation. So we're happy with that, and we're hoping that we can find other things to do along the way to help advertise to the 9/11 Truth community the danger involved in the current approach of the 28 Pages movement. I don't think I want to say more than that because I don't really have much more to add. I'm sorry, Cheryl isn't here to bring this up. Oh, yeah, Cheryl also did an interview of myself and Dick Atlee, who were the other two authors of that piece, for her radio program, the 9/11 Truth Wake-Up Call. So that was really, that was also accomplished. Other than that, there's nothing else happening with that group at the moment, so I think I'll just make leave it open for anybody that wants to make a comment or ask a question, and then we can move on to the next.
Well, I can say one quick thing, Ken. It's Craig. The article that was on Truths and Shadows got picked up by Mike Rivero's site, What Really Happened, which I gather has a fairly, gets a lot of readers, I suppose, because I can tell from mine that a lot of people have come to read the article from there. So I just thought you might like to know that it's got some exposure, some additional exposure there.
Very good to know. Thanks. Any other comments or criticisms or discussion on this? Because it will, I think it'll come back later on when we have our larger discussion on the question. So if not, we can move on to the next item.
Okay.
And that would be report.
Quick little thing right now. There's some background noise. Someone's got something talking in the background.
Is it Star Sake themselves?
I'm sorry. I think that's me. I'm going to move outside where it's quieter.
Okay, the Star 6 will mute your phone until you're ready to speak, and Star 6 will bring you right back in when you're ready to talk, okay?
Okay, then I can stay plugged in and my phone won't go dead.
Right,
okay.
Okay, thank you. So, did someone just join the call?
Yes, Paul Zaremka.
Paul Zaremka, welcome back, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
All right, so we're moving on to the next item on the agenda. That would be a report on the New York City Symposium and or the papal visit. Sounds like Barbara did not make the call. That's not too surprising given the recent death of her mother. But unfortunately, I don't think it's anybody. Well, wait a minute, Kat McGuire, you're from that end of town, aren't you? Kat?
Yes.
Could you give a report on any of that?
Unfortunately, I was out of the country.
Oh, you were out of the country. Okay. Yeah. Anybody else from the East Coast that might have attended the symposium or witnessed the papal visit to Ground Zero and have anything to report on either? If not, well, I'm sorry that we didn't get our guests that would be able to speak to that tonight. I have heard a report on this from Barbara on our critics group, and she gave a pretty lengthy synopsis. Apparently, the focus was not surprisingly on the 28 pages and things attendant to that, but it sounds like, I can't think of the name of that famous family member who had the son who died.
Bob McElveen?
Thank you. Bob McElveen gave a very impassioned speech in which he actually said something to the effect that he knows that the hijackers were not responsible for the death of his son, and he doesn't trust any politicians, including, apparently Mr. Graham. And that sort of got a lot of positive response from people in the audience, but I don't think it was very well received from the people who put on the symposium. And in fact, many of the reviews of the symposium did not include his comments verbatim, unfortunately, because they certainly challenged some of the main themes of the symposium. But other than that, apparently things went as pretty much as planned, and it was a 28 pages focus, and I think people from the LaRouche movement were present to speak as well. So I don't have any other further information than that I can report to you because I was not there myself. I'm very sorry that Barbara couldn't be here to give a full report. Maybe she will be able to grace us with her presence next time and we can pick it up from there. Does anybody else have anything to add to that brief summary? Guess not. It's just too bad our New Yorkers didn't make it today. All right. Well, I guess we'll move right into Craig's report then on the recent Pentagon presentation by Mr. Chandler at the... he's not a doctor, is he? It's just Mr. Chandler, right?
No, just Mr.
Yes, Mr. Chandler, at the Oakland 9/11 Truth Film Festival. So, Craig.
Okay, thanks. I really didn't expect it would be 8:15 when I would be starting this, but that's great. so I can talk slower. okay, so, yeah, the festival happens on the 10th, and Chandler gave a presentation on the Pentagon that I would characterize as one of the lowest points in the history of the 9/11 truth movement. If I had not known better, I would have thought Chandler was a debunker from Popular Mechanics. And I'm going to give you an example in a moment. But the talk was called Going Beyond Speculation, A Scientific Look at Pentagon Evidence. What struck me is what is that he speculated throughout and offered very little science to back up his position. I found it arrogant for him to suggest that those who reach a different conclusion than him have been speculating for the last 14 years. By the way, this charge was repeated by Ken Jenkins when he introduced a preview of the film that he's working on for next year's film festival. So after some introductory remarks, Chandler spent all but a few seconds of his talk reinforcing the official story. It seems that any of the physical evidence at the government site he sees as genuine and completely convincing. In addition to believing a plane, probably Flight 77, hit the Pentagon, he also believes the official flight path, the authenticity of the radar and FDR data, the fact that the plane hit the light poles, the fact that a light pole impaled itself in Lloyd England's taxi, that the Department of Defense video is genuine and does show a 757 crossing the Pentagon lawn. He also believes that the planes were hijacked, that all the debris on the lawn is from the plane, and that the exit hole was caused by the plane, and that the metallic junk that sort of was found in the alleyway there is from the plane as well. So now, just to go back to the debunker thing, I just thought I would read you a quote from the thing and compare it to something that James Miggs of Popular Mechanics said. And I know that this doesn't actually, you know, this doesn't particularly prove anything, but it's just for point of illustration. Chandler says, "The plane would have been shredded by this time, but the momentum of the debris carried it forward past the interior columns in a manner similar to the flow of a fluid." And then, taking from Massimo Mazzucco's film, September 11, The New Pearl Harbor, James Miggs says, "The mass of this plane penetrated the building with enormous energy and continued into the building in a state almost more like a liquid than a solid." So I was struck by that. You can draw sort of your own conclusions from whether that is relevant to anything or whether it's just an oddity, but I was struck by it. Chandler is a member of an unofficial but obviously coordinated team whose mission it appears to be to attack some of the strongest evidence we have that 9/11 was an inside job. And some of the people that I would include in this would be Jonathan Cole, Frank Legg, Jim Hoffman, Kevin Ryan, Ken Jenkins, and John Wyndham, along with a host of supporting players. Chandler told the audience that anyone who contends that no plane crash took place looks foolish and paranoid to the rest of the world. For years now, the group has been writing about what they call scientific or scholarly papers, and I put quotation marks around both of those words, that they say are intended to keep us all from embarrassing ourselves. I think we should all be asking ourselves why they would want to continue telling us that a critical part of the official story is true and that compelling and solid evidence that shows that there was no plane impact should be ignored. He disingenuously equates the no-impact position with things like space beams and holograms. And in his presentation, he continually refers to the Pentagon no-plane theory when he knows that no one of note says that there was no plane involved in the Pentagon event. I believe this was a subtle way of trying to marginalize the no-impact position and all the evidence that comes with it. After all, most truthers don't want to be associated with space beams and holograms. And here's, I want to just list a couple of things that he ignores in his talk. And when I say ignores, I mean he doesn't even mention them. He doesn't mention the Northrop Sitco evidence, which is shown in Citizen Investigation Team's film, National Security Alert. He literally doesn't even mention the existence of it, nor does he mention CIT or Pilots for 9/11 Truth. And he ignores all the important research that Pilots has done. He ignores evidence that the plane depicted in the FDR data could not have descended rapidly enough to level out and hit the building. He ignores the fact that the NTSB animation based on data from the flight data recorder shows a plane on a north pass and too high to hit the building. And he ignores the proof that the video released by the government was doctored as seen in Mazzucco's film. Instead, he spends time refuting Barbara Honegger's position that stopped clocks at the Pentagon indicate that the event happened at 9:32 and not 9:37:45. He refers to this as the current theory. Chandler speculates that one of the plane's engines hit the top of a tree and ingested the foliage. He speculates that the bits of unidentified debris scattered around the heliport are from a 757. He speculates that they ended up there because they bounced off the Pentagon wall when the plane hit on an angle. And here's a particular quote that I noted down because I'll read it and you'll see why. He says, "It turns out that the size of the hole and other damage to the facade is consistent with a high-speed 757 impact." So, that's a good quote. Most incredible of all, he speculates that the 757's fuselage and engines penetrated the building while the wings and tail section were blown into confetti. And he offers no science to support this claim. What he does refer to is the 1988 test by Sandia Laboratories, in which a Phantom F-4 was propelled by a rocket sled at 480 miles per hour into a 10-foot thick concrete wall. The F-4 appears to be blown into small pieces, although in the video we never really get to see what the aftermath, what the wreckage looked like after all the dust settled. But I don't find this test is comparable on a number of levels. The aircraft being tested is completely different from a 757. There's no fuel. They use water in the F-4 instead of fuel. But most importantly is that the F-4 did not penetrate the barrier, which is not what he claimed happened at the Pentagon. Chandler doesn't explain how a plane can both penetrate 300 feet into the Pentagon while very large parts of it are turned to confetti outside. Let's not forget that the tail section turned to confetti without breaking windows right in its path. So the all-too-familiar divisions that we see in the movement on the question of the Pentagon are, I believe, the work of this team, which behaves like a secret political party that is very good at staying on message and repeating catchphrases and talking points. Things like speculation, credibility, scientific methods, scholarly papers, things like that. Why is it an endless debate? It's not about the scientific method or going beyond speculation. It's about trying to undermine some of the strongest evidence that the truth movement has that 9/11 was an inside job. And it has done enormous damage. Just to conclude here, I believe it's long past time that the movement stand up to this group and insist on the value of the evidence that the Pentagon was the scene of a fake plane crash, and that there is only one entity that could have done that. So that's my description. So,
well, Craig, you certainly fortified our level of discourse with that superb rendering. Well, thank you for that. Who would like to be on the set to make a comment or ask a question? Barton, you all?
Yeah.
Okay.
Adam Brooks, you'd like to start?
Dwayne, okay, I got
Adam.
Dwayne.
Adam Syed?
Adam Syed, who else?
Did you get Adam Ruff?
No, I did not. Adam Ruff, okay. And who else?
Did you get Barry Zwicker?
No, Barry, I didn't. Thank you. Barry, and who else? Okay, I've got Bart, Dwayne, Adam Syed, Adam Ruff. And Barry, who else? Okay, then Barton, you're first. Go ahead.
Okay, I haven't seen it for a long time, but I remember way back seeing a picture of the Pentagon, an early one, before they crashed or blew up, or they did that section where everything collapsed. But if I remember correctly, there was a small hole in the wall about the size that someone had juxtaposed in one of the things I saw, a picture of somebody's castle or palace or something in Iraq, which had just had a cruise missile or something go through the side. There was a nice little round hole, which is about the size of this other hole. And then eventually that section of the Pentagon collapsed totally, but there was a file cabinet up on the second floor or something there with a piece of paper flapping on it that hadn't been lit afire by any big flames or anything. So that collapse sort of occurred later. But and I don't know where that picture is, but I'm sure someone's got a copy, or I hope someone's got a copy somewhere. But the other, in general thing, for David Chandler to have done this, what I think is a major about face. And then I remember the stories of Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's famous professor at Georgetown, near the end of his life, he was looking very scared, running around, sort of like almost looking over his shoulder. He'd been threatened with something, or something very, very bad had happened, or maybe some family member had been killed and said, we'll take off your family one or two at a time in some ghastly way if you don't shut up. And eventually we'll get to you. But in the meantime, the message is change your tune or shut up or whatever. And I wonder what has happened to him. And you know, like, my condolences go out to any family members who've been already killed and any that are about to be, or whatever the hell they've done to him. But I thought the guy had a lot of integrity before, and I would have rather doubted that he would have changed this way unless there was some rather extreme outside pressure. But that's just a reasonable guess. I'm finished.
Thank you. Okay, Bowman. Dwayne, you're next.
Two years ago, there was a conference at the Pentagon, at the hotel just to the west of the Pentagon, that focused on the Pentagon event. I presented a paper there, and much of what I presented were things that Craig just listed as speculation. I considered them evidence. I considered the F-4 Phantom test that Sandia ran to be a very convincing test data, empirical data, and I presented what I thought were the reasons why it was applicable. So the point that Craig said that it didn't relate or something like that to an F-4, I think it does relate, and I think it has to be taken seriously. And so I'll just, one other thing I say is, I will say now, is that I'm not part of that group, team, or whatever. I just looked at this independently, and I think it has to be taken seriously that the evidence is consistent with a large airplane, even though the majority of the truth movement doesn't share that view. I think that it has to be taken credibly, and it is evidence that either has to have a good explanation why it doesn't pertain, or else you have to accept it as evidence that does pertain. Over.
This is Barton. Can I just butt in for 2 seconds? Hamook and I shot those 2 days of video, and Hamook edited them and has them up on his 9/11 TV thing, so you can see the whole two-day conference if anybody wants it. If anybody really needs it, I've got the raw video, so if someone else wanted to re-edit for some reason.
Of which conference? Of the 2013 conference?
The two-day conference at the Pentagon City Sheraton in Reverend Moon's private, what was formerly Reverend Moon's private dining room on the 15th floor.
Okay.
Can I just make a comment, Ken, before?
If there's no objection, in response, to comment, then Adam Fry will be after you. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know at what, you know, when I'm, whether I'm supposed to, you know, respond or only if it's a question or whatever. But, I mean, you know, the idea of something being consistent with a 757 impact, I mean, the allegation that I and others are making is that it was staged to look like a 757 impact. So I think you have to look beyond simply, if, you know, it's consistent with. I mean, yeah, there's a hole in the side of the building, but, you know, it was supposed to, it was an illusion. It was supposed to look like a crash, and the same thing with having the X-hole in the C-ring. But I think, you know, I think the impact has to be proven. And I agree with you, Dwayne, that all this stuff needs to be taken seriously. And I'm not saying that the Sandia thing, I mean, I know you've studied that in more detail than I have, but I'm not saying that it isn't interesting or it doesn't show things that might be sort of peripherally relevant, but the conditions were very different, I find, between the two. So that's for the reasons I already gave. I mean, just the fact that that it didn't penetrate the barrier. I find there's a big difference there, because in the case of the Pentagon, it's being alleged that not only did a good part of the plane turn into confetti, but some of the plane plowed through three rings of the Pentagon. And I just don't find that credible. So that's my comment.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Dwight. Can I speak back?
Well, actually, we have a stack. So, but he was responding to you, right? So go ahead, Rebut. I guess we can take it quick, okay?
Yeah. One key thing is I do not agree that any of the impacting airplane, if that were in fact the case, was the reason for the hole in the C-ring. I think that was something different that did that. An important
sure.
point. Another thing I'll just go ahead and add, it wasn't mentioned here, but I think that the light poles were taken down in advance so that the airplane wouldn't hit it. And so that's a different viewpoint than others have.
Yeah.
But that's what it would have
Chandler clearly believes the exit hole is an exit hole made by the plane. So,
okay.
Different there.
That's a different theory. Okay. Thank you. Adam, Saeed?
Okay. Well, thank you for having me on. And I think that Craig McKee pretty much hit the nail on the head as far as his little summation here. I also happened to hear the audio of the Chandler talk, and it's... I was really surprised, and one thing that I'd like to just kind of reinforce of what Craig did say in his summation, it is quite interesting what information he just simply didn't even acknowledge the existence of. It's one thing, as, say, you know, Jim Hoffman or Frank Legg have done, to try to contest the validity of whether the plane flew on the north side of the gas station, but Chandler just simply did not even acknowledge the existence of such witnesses. And, of course, people who are familiar with this evidence know that the plane has to be on the official south of the gas station path in order to hit those five light poles. But not only does he not mention the existence of those witnesses to the contrary flight path, but he actually presents taxi driver Lloyd England's account as a genuine, truthful account, even though his account, not only does it have internal contradictions, meaning that the taxi driver has changed his own story several times, but externally there's other evidence that contradicts his account. So it's, I want to reemphasize that I've always had a lot of respect for what Chandler has done with his World Trade Center work. And I also, echoing the first person who spoke here in response, I think it's entirely possible that some of the really, really influential, scholarly people within the movement could have some various forms of offers or pressures or threats applied to them. Chandler is, after all, the physics teacher and ordinary Joe who rather heroically got NIST to admit free fall, which was a major thorn in the side of the debunkers who kept saying for years on JRF, oh, there was no free fall, you know. Well, all of a sudden that talking point was shot down by an admission, you know, by the government itself, and Chandler was the one who got them to admit it. So it would, it's possible that, and as another friend of mine and I have talked about, there's so many shades of gray. It's back in my earlier days, 5-6 years ago, when I was a little bit less evolved, I would, if somebody insisted that the plane hit the Pentagon from within the movement, I would say, okay, that person's either an idiot or an agent. But, of course, things are not that black and white. There are many shades of gray. And people could be given offers they can't refuse or threats. Or another possibility is MK Ultra-style mind control. They could actually be brainwashed into believing that what they're saying is really true. I mean, I think... I think that some people within, you know, people like Chandler and Jenkins, I have a feeling that some of them really truly believe that the case is extremely strong for a 757 impact. You know, yet it's common knowledge that most people in the movement think the case is extremely weak. So I think I'm kind of rambling here. That's about all I have to say. But I think that Craig has done a very good analysis and shown how Chandler, in his talk, he claims that those who say that the plane didn't hit are speculating and not engaging in science. But unfortunately, he shows time and time again that's what he himself does in favor of saying the argument that the plane did hit. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Adam. I'm going to put myself last on the list. And Adam Ruff is next.
This is Adam Ruff. So it's my turn to go?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just want to quickly go over a couple things Craig said. I want to reemphasize those. First of all, Chandler doesn't directly address the north of Sitgill eyewitnesses presented by CIT in his presentation, nor has he addressed CIT's very thorough debunking of his and Jonathan Cole's Pentagon paper. Chandler wrote a paper with Jonathan Cole, and CIT delivered what I think is a decisive debunking of that paper. And I think Chandler has an obligation to either address that debunking or withdraw the paper altogether. But he has done neither one. His paper is still posted as though it hasn't been debunked, and neither Chandler or Cole have addressed the numerous inconsistencies and errors in it that were exposed by CIT. And I don't know how we can still consider this paper to be valid and scientific, quote-unquote, if serious issues have been exposed in it that remain unaddressed. Secondly, the most important thing to me is that Chandler relies upon government-supplied data to make his arguments. And a lot of that data, we know for a fact, is tainted and can't be trusted as legitimate. Not only because it was supplied by the prime suspect in the crime itself, but we have proof that some of this was tampered with. For example, Chandler says airliner debris was all over the lawn and heliport area, despite the fact that much of this debris is unidentifiable, and it could be building debris or other debris unrelated to an airliner. We also have photographs, for example, of unknown individuals carrying what appears to be pieces of fuselage in the immediate aftermath of the Pentagon event. Now, why these unknown men are handling evidence at a crime scene is beyond me, but we don't know whether they were planting these pieces or simply moving them or whatever. We have no way of knowing because we just have still photographs. But in either case, it's a serious crime, and they should not be touching evidence at a crime scene. Regardless, this evidence is now tainted, and we can't trust it. If you're a reasonable investigator, if people were tampering with the crime scene and moving evidence or planting it, you have to throw it out because you can no longer trust it. The radar and black box data is likewise provided by the government, which Chandler relies upon, and it was provided in some cases as much as 10 years after the fact. Now, how can we trust that something provided by the prime suspect 10 years after the fact is authentic? I don't think we can trust that. And the main argument that Chandler and that group that Craig mentioned make is that there's this big witness pool that claim the plane impacted the Pentagon. and a lot of those witnesses and their and their statements are dubious, to say the least. The witnesses to impact are primarily secondhand accounts taken from the media, who, of course, is the prime suspect in the cover-up and the dissemination of the official narrative. These accounts are the recollections from reporters of what various people are supposed to have said. We don't know if these people were taken out of context or distorted in any way by the reporters. In any case, these so-called witnesses are far less valuable or trustworthy than the witnesses gathered by CIT, because CIT conducted in-person, highly detailed, on-camera interviews with each of their witnesses while standing in the locations they were actually located at on 9/11. All these witnesses cross-verify each other and prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the aircraft came towards the Pentagon flew north of the Citgo gas station. This fact is undisputed by any witness, whether they're Chandler's witnesses or CIT's. Furthermore, all of these witnesses were in the ideal position to observe the last few moments of the flight path, while many of the so-called impact witnesses were poorly positioned to observe the last few seconds of the flight path. And those are the witnesses that Chandler relies on. The witnesses offered by CIT also gave detailed recorded interviews to the government shortly after 9/11, in which they tell the same story they did to CIT. Those witnesses are therefore very reliable and much more valuable to us in building a case about 9/11 than the so-called impact witnesses, which are nothing more than short written snippets told secondhand from the media, which can't be trusted. You know, one of the main issues with Chandler is he tries to conflate the issue of impact with the flight path issue. And those are two separate issues, okay? The issue of impact is actually secondary and unrelated to the establishment of the flight path. And Chandler, among others, has used this distraction in particular to mislead people, okay? Impact is simply not possible on a south of Citgo trajectory. I'm sorry. Impact is simply not possible on a north of Citgo trajectory because it wouldn't line up with the damage to the Pentagon in any case. The simple fact of the matter is that once the north of Citgo flight path was established, the official story was doomed at that point. And the plane must have flown over the Pentagon. It's an undeniable logical conclusion, regardless of how many people claim the plane hit. Now, there are witnesses, even among CIT, that think the plane hit. One of those is Chadwick Brooks. He spoke to CIT, and he believed that the plane hit the Pentagon. But later, after they interviewed him a second time, he said that it is possible that he was mistaken about the impact. Okay, we believe there's a sort of a distraction, a misdirection going on there, like a magic show. Anyway, the fact of the matter is that Chandler isn't an expert on the Pentagon event, or in evaluating witnesses, or in evaluating the government supplied data. Okay, he's intentionally ignoring CIT's witnesses and the undeniable fact of the north of Citgo path that these witnesses expose. He also ignores the superb critique of his paper that CIT did, and he's relying almost completely on untrustworthy government-supplied data to make his argument. And that's all I have to say.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Adam. Barry Zucker is next.
Yes, thanks. I have to agree with virtually everything that was said, except Dwayne's contribution there, or at least most of it. So I won't go over the points that were made by the two Adams and Barton and indeed Craig. But I did go over the transcript of Chandler's presentation. And I'd like to just address very briefly his forms of argumentation. Besides omission, which is a serious problem in a paper that presents itself as scientific. I mean, omission is a really serious problem, and the omissions have already been mentioned. But he also employs misdirection of different kinds. He has unsupported, bald assertions. He sets up straw men. So it really comes down, I mean, he's a high school physics teacher now. For the reasons mentioned already, his presentation could not make a passing grade in a high school, I don't think, because of the many flaws in it. So the more interesting, to me anyway, question, which has already been mentioned, but I'll return to it, is who is he? What has happened to him? Why is he engaging in omissions, fabrications, and misdirections, and yet claiming to be a 9/11 truther? I mean, it's when you come to the argumentation, for instance, he says, we've heard it argued that the Pentagon attack is a central element of 9/11, if not the central element of 9/11, without which 9/11 might not have been seen as an act of war. And he says that's an interesting point. Let's assume it's true. So then he says it does not follow we must disprove the plane hit the Pentagon in order to show a covert agenda by the government. So he is trying to make common cause with those who see the government had a covert agenda, which he doesn't speculate about. That's all right. It was beyond the scope of his paper. The thing is that in making common cause with those who believe this was an inside job, and yet who follow the government narrative on the Pentagon, rather than being an authentic statement of truth, he is telling essentially a convenient lie that performs as a cover-up for the insiders that he claims to not trust, claims were behind it. I mean, he undermines his claim that insiders did it by having such a poor paper. And it's interesting, as a relatively small point, but he does raise the question of Norman Mineta and Cheney. And this is well known and well authenticated and documented exchange, as far as I know. And so he asks, why would the insiders engage in this conversation about a plane being 50 miles out, 30 miles out, 10 miles out, unless they were going to let that plane crash into the Pentagon? So that completely overlooks, as has already been pointed out, that yes, there may have been that plane, and Cheney probably did have something to do with that plane. And that was the plane that overflew the Pentagon. So Mineta just happened to be there and happened to expose that in a conversation, which happened to be recorded. So, I mean, that's a possibility, of course, that Chandler doesn't deal with whatsoever. So, to me, the question is, was David Chandler chosen as a very sophisticated kind of an agent to be a bait and switch operator, or because he could gain justifiable positive reputation within the 9/11 truth movement by his work on the New York scene. But then to switch to not using the same smarts, the same kind of argumentation, the same attention to evidence as he did with New York, in approaching the Pentagon issue, then something either was planned that way or he changed. And that's something that one of the Adams mentioned. And I don't think it's out of the way at all to mention MKUltra. We know that going back a long time, the CIA has been very interested in mind control. And it's proven there was the McGill experiments in psychic driving and everything, and they haven't been asleep since then at the mind control switch. And so God knows the substances, if they could get close enough to somebody and inject them with a particular psychotropic substance, or it could, there are many ways to change a person's mind, as it were, I'm sure. And there are university psychology departments, I think one of the University of Arizona, that, you know, they have government contracts to do this. I've read about them. So with I would say, my friend Ken Jenkins, I've stayed at his place. I like him. We work together. And then he's switched, too. It's like they have a switch that they can hit. And that's a distinct possibility. But that's about all I have to say.
Okay, thanks, Barry.
Well, I guess I'll go ahead and take my turn. Does anybody else want to be on the stack after me?
Yeah, Paul Zaremka.
Paul, and who else? Okay.
Well, Adam, I would like to be on the stack after you.
Okay, Adam would like to speak. Yeah, okay. Hi. Well, I'd like to say several things here. First of all, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but it does seem to me that it was the same coterie of people like Leggett and Chandler that were influential in some way, shape, or form in getting Richard Gage to withdraw his support for the CIT video. But that's just how I recall it. It may not have been the case, but that seems to me to have been the case. So that's like an early indicator of something there, I think. Despite the fact that the argument Gage made at the point was that the sole concern of the 89 Truth was with New York and the WTC, and therefore should not be meddling with the Pentagon, but that's where exactly Chandler and his ilk have gone. So that's kind of curious, too. The second thing I wanted to say was that in light of what Barry has commented on here about the turnaround of people who were purportedly 9/11 truth supporters, there's a curious parallel with this 28 pages movement that I think we should bring back into the picture here of people who were recognized 9/11 truth leaders or commenters in New York especially, who suddenly decided that in order to promote this transparency with the 28 pages, it was necessary to reinforce the official theory. And the common thread here is that it always goes back to the hijacking scenario. Somehow the hijackers continue to be vindicated as the perpetrators of 9/11 in all of these different kinds of reversals. So I think that needs to be borne in mind as we examine this as a tendency that's not just with Chandler's presentation or Jenkins' reversal or the other thing, but that it seems to be a pretty common occurrence in later recent months, and perhaps not coincidentally is what I'm wanting to suggest here. So I think at that point I'll I'll leave off commenting further and let Paul come in. Paul?
Yeah, thank
you. Let me interrupt. Will, let me interrupt for a second. Bill Wilkes, very late, takes more than 2 hours.
Thanks, Bill. Okay. Yeah, Bill. Okay. Thank you for showing up. Okay, we got you. Okay.
Mike Cook here. I'd like to be on the list to speak.
Okay, Mike, I'll put you after Adam Ruff. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I have a number of comments. First of all, I'd like to ask anybody who is surprised by Chandler's move what they thought was Chandler's contribution other than the free fall. Is there anything that Chandler ever did that was other than that particular issue? And I'm asking that because my own reaction to when he put that out was not so, oh my God, he's got it, you know, I mean, like, whatever. And that leads me to wonder whether, I mean, there's one way to get an agent into the movement, and that is to have the agent do something that sets up the movement. And so I'm wondering whether that's going on here. I don't think you need mind control to get to that point. Although I'm willing to talk about mind control, but I don't think you need to have him switch to get to where we're at today. Now, the other thing I want to make a comment about is that Chandler is on the 9/11 consensus panel, and if you read David Ray Griffin's 9/11 10 years later, chapter 7 on the Pentagon, a consensus approach, is a 46-page piece without ever mentioning CIT, also, I mean, the Citizen Investigating Team either, and not in any way whatsoever. So to say that Chandler doesn't do it, well, it falls on not Chandler, but it also falls on Griffin because he didn't do it either. And in some ways, I think what Griffin was doing was more responsible, given that his leadership role in the movement, he was even more obligated to deal with CIT than Chandler is. I mean, I'm not saying Chandler's not obligated, but I think Griffin would be even more called upon to do it, and that includes whatever might be relevant for the consensus panel, but I think I'll just stop there. That's all.
Thank you, Paul. Adam Ruff.
Okay, this is Adam Ruff. I want to reemphasize something Paul just said, because I agree with it quite a bit. I, too, don't think that the mind control angle is necessary. And I also agree with what Paul said about Chandler's contribution to the movement. Although I'm delighted that he did get NIST to admit free fall, I have to point out that the trans movement by that point was talking about nothing else other than the free of World Trade Center 7. That was our mantra back then. So it's not like he came up with some brand new information like Stephen Jones did with the thermite issue, for example. All Chandler did was take what the movement was already saying, and basically we had that down to a science ourselves before Chandler ever even came on the scene. So I'm not trying to diminish what he did. I mean, it was fantastic and really helpful to get NIST to admit that free fall, but it was common knowledge in the truth movement at that point, is all I'm saying. And as far as I know, Chandler hasn't contributed anything else other than attacks on CIT and the people who believe in the flyover hypothesis. But as far as mind control, I don't think that's necessary, and here's what I think is underlying Chandler and Ryan and several other people's contentions with the Pentagon evidence. I think it's an ego issue. And that's why I think they're so negative towards the Pentagon evidence, because their bailiwick is the World Trade Center. And their claim to fame is the controlled demolition of the towers. And they want our energy and attention focused on their particular bailiwick. They don't want anybody considering other issues in the 9/11 Truth Movement, because that distracts from them and their work. So I think it's a very simple issue of ego. They want all of us focused on them and reviewing them as the heroes of the movement, and they don't want any of these upstarts who happen to find some interesting information about the Pentagon crowding in on their fame. So I think that's what's behind the whole thing, is just ego problems.
All right, thanks, Adam. Who just joined the call?
Hi, Ken. This is Nebulani. Sorry I'm getting on late.
Oh, hi, Ned. We're glad you could make it. Okay. Mike Cook is next.
Hey, thanks a lot. Boy, there's an awful lot to respond to. You know, these calls can go on for many hours. I'm trying to be brief here. Got a pretty good little list of stuff I want to get through. I think I may be the only person on the call. Hi, who joined us?
Cheryl.
Hey, hi, Cheryl. Cheryl.
Hi.
Hey, good deal. Maybe we can get to our issue after all, because we still need a report on that on the symposium and what the HR 14 group may or may not be up to at this point. So we'll try to save a little time for that, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Hey,
so go ahead, Mike.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I'll try to be quick. I think I'm probably the only person on the call who has been a victim of mind control and knows about it. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with my story, a very short version is I was set up to be the American patsy, and it didn't go down as planned. I'd be dead if it did, and that's an awful long story, and I apologize if you don't know. It's something I've kind of tried to keep somewhat under wraps, not completely for sure, but for obvious reasons, it's something I haven't broadcast real loudly and widely. I want to offer support for David Chandler. I think he's done a ton of really good work. He's got so many videos. Just watch all his videos and try to convince yourself that this guy is an agent. I don't think anybody who is an agent would do that amount of really good work. You know, sometimes they got to do some to get their cred, right? But he's just done an awful lot of really good work, breaking things down so that anybody can understand it. It's much, much more than just getting missed to admit freefall. That was a nice feather in the cap, but I think his videos stand alone. I wanted to ask a question. Isn't the date stamp on the video that they provided from the 10th, is that correct?
The 12th.
The 12th, okay, the day after. Right. It's always been my position that video was destroyed immediately, within minutes or hours at the outside. That's why you confiscate incriminating evidence, is to destroy it. It wouldn't be hanging around anywhere. So I think that the calls, you know, when people ask you to see it, are just ridiculous. I am in favor of the mind control explanation. I mean, it's possible that people are forced into a position because of threats or bribes or whatever. I believe a lot of people have integrity, you know, and they're going to stand up and do what's right no matter what. There's lots of examples of this. Martin Luther King, that Webb fella that exposed the CIA, he wasn't backing down. They police officer at the OK City bombing, you know, lots and lots of people will not back down no matter what. So when I see people being as smart as David Chandler is on top of things as he is, I really have to ask why. Why is he taking this position? And the mind control, from my personal experience and what I know about it, springs as the first and best answer. And I'd like everybody to remember David Chandler, the MI5 agent.
Yep.
went completely crazy. I think he's a good example of somebody they just completely fucked over. I think they have this down to a very fine science, and they can, keep people functional and doing what they want to do, puppets on a string, if you will, which they love. And they can also go too far and just, like, wreck somebody. And I think they wrecked him.
They wrecked him?
David Shaler.
Yeah,
he's a great example of somebody they went too far with, and probably on purpose. And I don't think that happens a lot because of the credibility or, the questions that would come up. Why are all these folks suddenly going completely crazy? As far as defending AE, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, I got to say that, ego is always involved in any kind of human interaction, and you have to accept that. But they have the most bomb-proof, ready-for-court evidence, and I applaud and support strongly their narrow focus. It's very boring. They don't get into anything else. And that's very frustrating to a lot of people in the business. They want to talk about everything else, mind control and the Illuminati and whatever. It's the Pentagon, Shanksville, and it's all viable topics, very, very much. But their focus is the most lethal weapon to the official story. I also believe that the Pentagon is just as lethal a weapon. And I think that the perpetrators have seen that, and that's why they have made these efforts to make this such a controversial issue within the movement. And I think without their interference, it wouldn't be. And I guess that's all. Thanks a lot.
If I could ask you, Mike, the only way we would be familiar with your personal case in mind control is if you'd published something somewhere or had broadcast anywhere, have you?
Yeah. Way back in 2003 or 2004, I wrote a document. It wasn't very good. It needs to be redone, and I published it. I sent it out via fax to the FBI and news agencies and all kinds of folks. It's out there. A lot of folks had it. So some folks in the movement have read it. And like I say, it wasn't really very well written. I was in a state of great duress, so it really should be redone and kind of the whole story be told, because there were things I left out just because they sounded so crazy, and then I had Skype conversations with a girlfriend that have obviously been seen by a lot of people. I haven't seen it myself.
Is it available online? Did you post it online, anyone?
You will see. Anytime I look for stuff on myself, I never find it. I see evidence. I know that people have seen it, but I can't access it myself. And I can probably connect you guys with somebody who can, who has seen it. I've conversed with him, Claudio Marti. If you know of him. From the I Am the Face of Truth movement, the Faces of Truth movement, that put the banner on your profile picture on Facebook. The fellow behind that heard about me, and we talked a little bit. We didn't get in depth or anything like that. But
okay, well, I just wondered if there was something out there that people could refer to if they wanted to know more about your story.
I can't send you a link or anything. It's something I probably need to go like fully public with fairly soon. I'm busy with work, and I'm busy with trying to live my life and have a little fun too. So it's something I haven't got done.
All right. So would anybody else like to make a comment on this question before we return to the earlier question that we weren't able to fully develop?
This is Craig.
Can I just? Oh, sorry.
Cheryl? Okay, I'll put you on the list.
Go ahead.
And who else?
Craig,
and who else?
Yeah, could I just make a very brief comment in response to Mike's he mentioned David Shaler, and I can give a personal testimony that I met David Shaler in England in 2005, and we spent about an hour. It was on a bus ride from London to Manchester. I sat across the aisle from him. We had a most marvelous, I should have taped it, discussion about all sorts of stuff. And I could attest that he was 100% totally sane, informed, sense of humor, the works. And then what happened later was he was in France. Somebody managed to get him put into jail. So then he was at their mercy, and he started to declare that he was Jesus Christ. So, I mean, this is one of the clearer examples, and I'm glad it was raised.
Okay, thanks, Gary. If anybody has any background noise going on, please press star 6, and then the rest of us won't need to hear it until you're ready to speak, and then you can press star 6 again and join the discussion. Okay, so Cheryl, go ahead.
I just wanted to know, I came in late, who Mike is, Mike's last name, or...
Mike Cook.
Okay.
Yeah, Mike Cook. I volunteer with Architects and Engineers. I've written some articles for them. I've helped raise funds. I've been on the verification team. I have a college degree. I've been run out of a lot of jobs, including the teaching career. And I did a year, almost a year, in prison. I was charged with being insane and having firearms. And the way it all worked out, I actually kind of demanded that the Secret Service charge me and I could try to get into court. I didn't make it into court. They decided that I was not competent to stand trial. And so I was just like hell a year and messed with as much as possible and released. And the case was dismissed. The numbers on the case are 666, like 06-660, Michael Cook, or the United States versus Michael Cook. It's public record. You can Google it. Or, I'm sorry.
Sounds terrible.
Not,
wow.
Yeah, not Google, but Pacer. If you get a Pacer account, you can access court records online. It's a very small charge, like a penny a page or something like that, and the account is free. It's mostly used by lawyers when they're researching a case, you know, looking at different things that are filed in court. But,
Thank you. Craig, you were next?
Yeah, I just thought I would mention Ken Jenkins, who's come up a couple of times, gave a little 5-minute introduction to what was a preview of the film that he was working on. And it's interesting how the way he framed everything is he talked about how successful A&E has been and how wonderful their approach has been. And then he says, in more recent years, some of the same scientists and engineers that helped make A&E so successful have turned their attention to the unanswered questions at the Pentagon. There now exists a growing body of scholarly papers, websites, and group efforts utilizing the scientific method to examine these Pentagon questions, and they have converged on a central thesis that challenges some of our persistent beliefs within our movement. So to me, that's a very slippery way of saying, you know, if you like A&E when it comes to the World Trade Center, you'll love the same people when it comes to the Pentagon, because they have all these scholarly papers. And they've all converged on a conclusion. So I found that to be a very slippery way of supporting the plain impact position, and I just thought I would, throw that one in there.
Okay.
I think that's exhausted the list. Does anybody else have a need to say anything before we move back to the earlier issue that we weren't able to deal with because Cheryl wasn't here?
Adam, just have a very fast comment.
Who?
Okay, this is Adam Ruff. The mind control issue, I just want to mention another name real quick, that of Charlie Veach of the Love Police, kind of went off the rails too. But the final point I wanted to make about Chandler and this argument against the Pentagon evidence is I don't understand why it has to be an either-or proposition with some people. I personally think that the Pentagon evidence is a great support and addendum to the World Trade Center evidence. Now, I don't see why they're necessarily competing theories.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why discussing the Pentagon would dilute or diminish the importance of the controlled demolition evidence at all.
Yeah. Adam Syed here with an extremely quick comment.
Go ahead.
Okay. In my final little afterthought to this Chandler thing is that 4 years ago, when he and John Cole wrote the joint statement, which was basically little more than just an attack on CIT, in my opinion, they were framing it, of course, in this, you know, we are responsible truthers. But one of the things that Chandler Cole said in the joint statement was the Pentagon was a dead end for 9/11 research. And compare and contrast that to Chandler in, or excuse me, to Jenkins in 2015 saying the far from a dead end. Oh, now all of the respected AE 9/11 truth scientists that have written all these scholarly papers are now turning their attention to the Pentagon and are all concluding that the plane hit. What a contradiction, you know, from Chandler 5 years ago saying this is a dead end. The Pentagon's a dead end, to Jenkins now saying, oh, we've now turned our attention to it. And, yeah, I agree with exactly what the preview, I think it was Craig, just said. That, yeah, it's the message is essentially, it's a subtle way of strong-arming you. Like, yeah, if you like AE 9/11 truth, then you'll be on the right track if you like Frank Legg and David Chandler's stuff on the Pentagon. And, yeah, so there's a little bit of... I guess groupie-ism at work there, I guess you could say. Anyway, that's about it from me.
It's also worth, just to throw this on, Chandler himself, right at the end of his talk, starts off, I think, the last, you know, group of comments with, you know, with all the new information we have, we can now say that a plane definitely hit the Pentagon. And I think he himself, he is completely contradicting himself in saying so, because I'm not aware of any evidence that is available now to him or that he's cited that he didn't know about, 5 years ago or 4 years ago. So I just thought I'd throw that in, too. Kind of funny.
Yeah, this is Ken. I'd like to, you know, just jump on that real quick by saying that, the way the 28 pages movement is saying that this new evidence that we should be able to get from the 28 pages will definitely indict the Saudis as being behind the, you know, hijackers and therefore give us the denouement for 9/11. You know, it's very similar in that respect. It's another way of saying, you know, here's the new stuff, folks, and here it is. It's going to prove, ta-da, the old conspiracy theory again. Here we go, you know. I just have to throw that out. Okay, so since we don't have a lot of time left, if nobody objects, I'd like to reopen our earlier issues that we weren't able to speak at length about. Because Cheryl is here, she can give us hopefully a little more update on what the HR 14 Critics Group, aka the Truth Team, is doing, and also more to the point, what the symposium in New York and or the papal visit might have to do with the charge of making China. So go ahead, Cheryl, if you can help us with
that.
Yeah,
let me start with the symposium. So I found it really disappointing, well, probably no surprise there, but its whole focus was really, the whole theme of it was the 28 pages, in my opinion. You know, it was called Transparency on the Rise, and they showed a picture. I think that was constantly up on the front screen of Congress, you know, the Congress building. And just some, they had, when you went into this, it was in a church, and it was a very dark church, so dark wood, and so it was kind of it didn't give you an open, good feeling. But they had it, you were supposed to go in, and they had it labeled for congressional districts, so you go in and sit in your congressional district, sort of work on these 28 pages with your congressional district. But, you know, most people didn't follow that, so that kind of fell apart. At lunchtime, they had the 28 Pages group's meeting by their congressional district upstairs, and they were putting out little flyers that they passed around that said that this was this is a sponsored by the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And I showed it to Richard, and, you know, his board has voted that they can't have anything to do with this, so people keep putting that out there. And I don't know if it's intentional to undermine or if they, I don't know, I don't quite get that. But so that was going on. And Barbara Honegger was told not to talk about the Pentagon. Her speech was on anthrax, but she was specifically told by Les not to talk about the Pentagon. And Wade Madsen was told, I'm assuming it was by Les, but I don't know that for sure, but he was told not to talk about Israel. And then there was no Q&A that was open questioning. They passed out cards, and you had to write out your questions, and then Les picked which questions to take. And then he didn't have all the panelists up on the panel to answer the questions, any people who had spoken throughout the day. He only picked a select few. And Barbara wasn't included in that. And then for the keynote, they had John Perkins. I really like John Perkins for what he does. I really do like him, but he's not a 9/11 person. To have him as the keynote speaker, I thought was kind of strange for a 14th anniversary event. I wasn't there. I had to leave early, so I missed his speech. But I saw parts of it online, and you know, it didn't. It was nice, but it wasn't anything, you know, that really related to 9/11 in a great way. And then they had Bob McElvain spoke in the morning after they had done their 28 Pages panel. And I do think because of our efforts in the Truth team trying to challenge them on this that they toned down some of their talk. Because Jeff Steinberg, who usually has said on when I've seen him on YouTube, you know, he talks about how the Saudis were behind 9/11 and did it. He didn't say that explicitly, so I felt like they had toned themselves down. But the really great part of the day was after they'd had that panel and maybe another something, I can't remember, but Bob McElvain got up and spoke, and he was just fabulous, and he said, you know, Muslims didn't do 9/11, and, you know, he has positive proof of that, and he said, you know, sure, we should all see the 28 pages, but that's just the total, it's the very beginning, and he kind of let them know that he didn't like sort of what they were doing about that, but, you know, and so he was great, and he got a standing ovation, and so then I realized that most people in the room weren't really liking their approach to the 28 pages and what they were doing, so I'm assuming that by the great applause that Bob received. Nita and Frank and I were there, and it was nice to meet Nita, and we passed out a one-page flyer based on the letter that we had, a modified part of that letter that we had sent Les. And so we passed that out to the audience before lunch. And there was a legal panel that I thought was a little bit interesting there, and the psychologist panel were probably the two most interesting things there. But basically it was boring. For a 9/11 event, I felt really bored. I didn't really get much new out of it. So that's sort of a synopsis of how the day went.
Okay, thank you. And did you happen to learn anything about any actions that were taken when there was the papal visit to 9/11? Was any effort made by anybody to do anything about 9/11 yet?
I have no idea about that.
Okay. Okay.
Hey, it's Mike Cook again. Can I say so?
Okay, Mike. Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, thanks. Just in defense of the 28 pages effort, I think that we can sometimes be guilty of myopsy and getting too narrowly focused and miss the big picture. This is a siege. This is a war of attrition, and they're going to have all kinds of fallback positions, and that's the idea. Get them to fall back and fall back and fall back and fall back until eventually you're at the core and you win. It's going to be endless. I mean, to the moment we hang them, they're going to have different stories and positions. The important thing about it, I think, the 28 pages is it's keeping it in the public eye. It's keeping people questioning. The government is hiding something about 9/11 and catching them lying, you know. Well, they lied about this. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to respond to that, if I may. it's not, you know, we're not saying don't, you know, declassify the 28 pages. What we're saying is if you're going to do it with an honest approach using what we know in the 9/11 truth movement. The 28 pages, H.R. 14, are going along with the government account, and they're not challenging.
That's fine. That's fine.
So that's what
fine.
We're saying. Is
yeah, see, that runs against the grain of a lot of truthers, but I say it's fine. So long as it's, and we don't even know what it is for sure. I mean, the rumor is top secret classified, but we all already know it involves Saudi funding, right? So how top secret is it really? They could have made it up out of thin air. You know, we have no idea what it is.
Right.
But the idea is we're pushing for information, and they're hiding
yes,
something.
But again, Mike, I have to say, when we push for the information, we don't want to push by repeating and endorsing the official story. We kind of shoot ourselves in the foot by doing that. I think we need to say, look at the 28 pages, but know that it's a flawed report. You know, the Saudis didn't do it, and put the truth out there.
This is the myopsy that I'm referring to. Anytime 9/11, how do you say it?
Myopia.
Anytime 9/11 comes up, it's an opportunity for the real information to get in. Okay, as long as it's football and basketball and baseball and the stars and whatnot, we don't get through. Okay, anytime 9/11 comes up and people are interested, that's an opportunity for us to get through. You know, this is already a very good issue.
I'm just going to, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that that approach
okay.
that they're taking.
Okay.
That's
fine. It's a marketing tool. You know, and any time your issue comes up, you want to get in there.
Not by repeating the lies that they're telling.
Right.
We won't be. I won't be repeating any lies.
Can I get in a plug for the 9/11 Massachusetts Fall Foliage Tour? Or foliage
sure.
tour?
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay.
We're gonna have a time for announcements before we close. Okay.
Okay. Good.
Okay. If I may, Mike, I would just like to comment that you haven't been on the calls previously where we've exposed how the HR14.org website is using the 28 pages to reinforce the official story, not to advocate for it in a way that's friendly to 9/11 truth. And that's the biggest question here. It's not just people want the 9/11 to be open. It's that they're doing it in a way that reinforces. And this is being done by people who are supposedly 9/11 truth leaders. Okay, it's part of the betrayal of our basic message. That's
very interesting information to me, and I haven't been through that website a lot.
Right. Go to HR14.org and see what you think, okay? And if you want more information, we can give you more information.
Yeah. I'll look.
Okay. All right. So with that said, I think we are ready for announcements. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for updating us on the symposium. And who wanted to make the announcement there about the Massachusetts?
Bill Will?
No. Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
This was about the 9/11 Massachusetts Fall Foliage Tour. And because of the, I just read Rebecca Roth's two books, and she brings up so many incredible connections to Massachusetts in this thing. Logan Airport, for years without CCTV cameras, Massport honchos were connected to Weld and Weld. I mean, it's just Otis Air Force Base on Cape Cod, Otis, Massachusetts, the other end, where a plane was flying so low as United Airlines that the witness could see their faces. You swore an affidavit to this effect. And her pointing out that essentially the new theory is that all four planes were taken over by the hijacker interrupt ground control software and hardware that were flown to Westover. The phone conversations, the cell phone conversations, took place on the ground. And then there's the Miner Corp. Amdocs in Boston, P-TECH, Milton, timesharing something, a military contract in Waltham, Raytheon, big time in Waltham, nice lawn, lots of geese and leaves, the 92 people who were killed, and there's how many things do I have? We've got
So on this fall foliage tour, I've got 14 places we could visit that are 9/11 centric, if you will. It's really a stunning thing to me. And
is
I'd really like to get.
Is there a website still to find this?
No, you know what? That's a good idea. I could do that. I was thinking of pamphlets we could hang out, hand out like the AAA. You know, it's fall. Go out and see the leaves. If it's fall, go out and look for 9/11. Anyway,
it's all like the powers, the pre-fall.
Right, and the other thing is, I told you about my campaign or contest to rename the USS New York to something like the USS Obstruction of Justice, because it's got 7 tons of steel from the World Trade Center. How the hell did they get that? But in any event, they molded it, melted it, and molded it into the prow of this USS New York as a kind of a floating affront to all of us. And I thought we could have a carved, the lady on the front of the thing, the figurehead, have that be 9/11 buildings crumbling to the ground, maybe just WTC-7. So that's it for me.
Wow.
Okay. Thank you for that announcement. Any other announcements?
Cheryl here. I have one question. Did you say Rebecca Roth wrote a second book?
Yes, she did.
What's the name of it?
It's called Methodical Deception, as opposed to Methodical Illusion, which was the first book.
Right. I can't keep them straight, but it's illusions first and then deceptions. It's like, and her interviews are like, holy smoke. Can we get her on this call, please?
Well, Ned is trying. Ned, you're still on the call. Ned is working on trying to get her to join us on the call. So.
Barbara Honegger gave the blurb for her first book, so maybe Barbara has something.
Oh, there you go. There's a connection. Yes, there's a connection for us. You're right. Thank you very much for that proposal, for that suggestion, and maybe we should ask Barbara if she would be kind enough to make the connection for us.
Can I make a comment, Bob?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Paul.
For those of you who are enthusiastic about Rebecca Roth, Craig's Truth and Shadows has a blog on Rebecca Roth, and I want to just make the comment that we don't know anything about her, nothing.
Yep,
we only know her.
So what? Our job is to take an asseveration or an explanation and double check it, triple check it.
Yeah. This is kind of like a comment on that because I've considered that question as well, but we have to recall her stated fears and her obviously she's writing under a pen name of some sort. Interestingly, though, she's able to run a website and everything else, but. In any case, it seems to me that we have to take into account the possibility that she's trying to protect herself from repercussions.
Right.
But I do take your point. I mean, it's something that has to be taken in the mix, but so does the other part.
And I wasn't finished, so if I could just... I don't know if people know, but Paul Craig Roberts has a new book out called The Neoconservative Threat to World Order.
Yep.
Charity Press. So that sounds like a really good one. And then we went to Maine this past weekend to help with the Maine people at the table at the Maine Organic Farmers Big Fair, and they get like over 60,000 people in the weekend. And we had a great response at the table and a great time. And some girl came up to us and handed us about 20 of Beyond Misinformation booklets that AE just put out. She said her dad is a supporter and couldn't be there, so we don't know these people, but they gave us the books to pass out, the booklets, so that was kind of cool. And
awesome.
So, yeah, we really reached a lot of people. It was very good.
Cool. Okay. Any other announcements?
The Blue Jays won the Eastern Division.
That's important. Yeah, that'll be fun. We definitely couldn't say goodnight right here yet, Bruce.
I couldn't.
Well, on that note, then, I guess we'll call it an evening and look forward to seeing everybody on the last Wednesday of October for further ado, and hopefully we'll have some luck getting Rebecca Ross to join us at some point in the near future. That's our goal. All right. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
Bye.